Time.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Atlantic Bushcraft Adventures. Tonight we are on episode 245 and thought we'd chat a little bit about hot tenting. Mainly what brought this on was just before the show, Ben and I were talking. Once upon a time, we made our own stove. And when Ben relocated across Canada, I inherited the stove and I had never used it in a tent because I truly hadn't really been hot tenting. You know what I mean? So I said, screw it. I had those Polish Levus that I was trying to make a hot tent out of. So I just put them together. I stuck the Levus together, put them out back. It's just in the backyard. I didn't go into the woods. I didn't have the time, unfortunately. But anyway, I jammed the stove in there, got a little fire going, and realized, as I was talking with Ben before we came in here, it doesn't take a lot of heat to warm that area up. The stove's probably way too big for that little tent. But it was a fun experience, and it got me kind of thinking about it and working on some stuff, and I thought we'd just have a little chat about it, Ben. And I know you have experience hot tenting. Like, you've done it several times now, and you enjoy it.
I do enjoy it, and yeah, I have quite a bit of experience now, not as much as some, probably more than many. And no, it's very much an enjoyable thing. There's nothing quite like getting out in nature, and especially when most people aren't trying, like most people just don't do it. So if you're willing to walk in a little bit and spend a night, you pretty well guaranteed a nice night with just you and anyone you chose to take with you. You're not going to get interrupted a ton. If you're a place where snowmobiles are much more prevalent, you might see a few of them come by because they can cover great distances. But yeah, no, it's a very fun thing to do. And like I said, we did build a stove. Now, the stove we built's a bit big.
It is. It was made out of an old helium tank and some scrap steel that we had floating around. It was our first attempt. I still think it was a good attempt on our part for a couple of guys that really were not great at welding at the time and a bunch of spare parts we had floating around. You know what I mean?
It was our first attempt, but not my first attempt. I had built the camel cans.
Yeah, but your camel can one was actually pretty good because you had the camel can to start off with. Functionally, it was already square. You know what I mean? With the one we made, we kind of started with the keg shape or the cylinder shape, and then we just went from there. And we got creative with it. And it actually works fairly decent. Now that I've used it again, there's a couple things that I may try and change up a little bit, like the draft system in it, and maybe raise the bottom up a tiny bit. But just playing with ideas for version 2. And I already told you I have another idea in mind now for my second stove that I'm going to attempt and make.
Yeah, I mean, and it's a fun activity to make stuff out of those things. So let's see. I think to start off with, do you need a hot stove? Like, do you need like a wood stove to heat one? I think that's a good question to ask.
Do you need a wood stove for hot tent camping?
Yeah.
And you know what? That is a good question to ask because, once again, just before we came on, you kind of gave me an idea for mine. Because, once again, keep in mind, folks, if you haven't seen these things, I suggest you look them up online. They're basically two ponchos that button together or zip together, depending on where you get, and they're supposed to make a small tent for two people. The military used to kind of coin the design, if I'm not mistaken, the Polish military, because that's where it gets their name. And it was basically, out of the one poncho, you could make an individual lean-to shelter for one. But then as the weather got colder, you would buddy up, and you would make this kind of teepee style shelter for two, and then you had the extra body heat in there to try and keep you warmer. Am I right, Ben? You kind of know a little bit more about this than I do. I'm just going from what I've kind of researched.
Yeah, that's essentially right. I mean, the Canadian military did something similar with the Ranger blankets, or not Ranger blankets, the what do you call them, the ground sheet?
Ground sheets.
One of the ground sheets could be used as a lean-to or shelter, two could be put together into a tent. But it didn't have a place for a chimney, and you didn't really have ends, but it kept the weather off of you. If you got more together, you could keep sewing them and form something much, much bigger. So various methods over the years have been found. But yeah, the Levu, I think it became very popular, what, 5-6 years ago? Everyone was talking about it.
Yeah, they exploded. Of course, that's when I jumped on board. I had to be part of the hype. But yeah, no, and they kind of took off. Anyway, long story short, two of these things together are not very big. It's not a big tent. And the stove we made was really too big for that tent. Like, I only had a handful of wood in there and I was sweating bullets. It was too much for that tent. You know what I mean? Well, so, yeah, it's a good question. Do you need a wood stove?
It was designed, in defense, that one was designed because we were going to make a pallet wrap
shelter.
And so it was expected that it was going to heat something that four or five of us were going to be in.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we built the stove to actually do much, much more, but I wanted to use it in a tent.
Me and you went and got into it one time. We did set that LeVu tent up one time, and our agreement was that it would be basically tight for two adults similar to me and you.
Yes. Like, you could do it. There's enough room for, if I remember correctly, there's enough room we could both lay down. And had a small amount of room to store gear. But, I mean, we were not being... You wouldn't want to be in there with your worst enemy. You got to know the person you're in there with. You know what I mean? You got to be comfortable to some degree. Yeah.
You wouldn't go in with a stranger, because afterwards you would not be strangers.
Yeah. It's pretty tight quarters. I mean, there was a little bit of room in the middle where we figured we were going to get the stove. But I mean, there wasn't really a ton of room. We figured it out. It's like, what, 8 feet, maybe 10 feet across at the bottom. But then of course it pitches up as a teepee. So you're basically not standing up in this thing. You're going in it to lay down to go to sleep.
When you consider where the sides and stuff are, if you got a tent in there, you would definitely run the risk of like ruining a sleeping bag by accidentally touching it or knocking things over. So in something like that, I would suggest something like it would have to be a very small stove.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeremy, Lone Wolf 902, he did an experiment a few years back where he used a oil lantern to heat one. And so what I had proposed earlier to you, and that we can, what about the UCO lantern, but the three one. Just throw that up there for anyone wants to see. Could one of these bigger ones, because it's, 4 inches round, produce enough heat to keep you from freezing?
And I think it would. See, the idea with a hot tent, and this is the misconception with a hot tent, I think, with a lot of people. Yes, it can get toasty in there, but you're not depending on the wood stove to keep you warm 100% of the time. It's basically just to cut the chill, you know what I mean? Or at least that's my envisionment from it. It's to keep it from dropping to those dangerous temperatures where your sleep system's no longer going to function. If you found a way to like get up off the ground a little bit and stuff like that, then yeah, maybe you could rely on the heat a little bit more. But the reality is, in, well, at least this situation, you're sleeping on the ground. So you're literally at the lowest place. Most of that heat's going to rise up and be expelled out anyway. But it's going to break a lot of the heat. So maybe if it's going to be like minus 20 outside, you're not going to bring that closer to zero or a little better. You know what I mean? So it's not going to be so devastating on you. Is that what your experience was, Ben? Because I know these smaller stoves too, you're constantly feeding wood into them. It's not like you can stock the stove for the night and go to sleep and forget about it if you want constant heat.
Yeah, I've never managed to say I've eliminated the need for warm weather gear in them. I mean, I've gotten it to points where it was warm enough that I was comfortable taking my jacket off and getting changed, but I still ended up putting clothes back on. I wasn't sitting there sweating and regretting it. It was just, you know, outside was minus something and inside was much closer to not freezing. And it really is like the further up you go, as you get closer to the top, it could get quite warm, so you can put stuff up there to dry and stuff. But then what's near the ground, because you're generally not in a cot. You're not up in what I think they call the heat chamber. Was it a chamber? Yeah. Anyways, the heat level, it rises. And higher you go up, the hotter it is in there. But it's thin material. Like, you're bleeding heat constantly. Like, you can't keep it in there. So
it's basically an indoor campfire you're harnessing in a can. Like, let's not kid ourselves, you know what I mean? You're getting a lot of radiant heat, but it's like you said, it's not like it's an insulated house. A lot of this stuff is just bleeding straight out through the fabric.
So anything you have in there that's creating heat is holding heat in there, and like, it keeps the wind and the snow off of you, so it keeps you more comfortable that way, and it makes it a much better experience. So yeah, you can get away a few other things. And I want to talk about a few of those things. Obviously, the, you know, the candle stove is an option, even a propane lantern. Those things put out a surprising amount of heat. And if that's inside with you or a kerosene lantern, that would produce a fair bit of heat. You do have to make sure you're venting some of that heat.
I was just
And
about to say, safety warning, folks, make sure that we're
you.
venting a little bit of air because carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, that's real stuff.
And what Jeremy had done in his experiment, he actually ran a chimney off the top of the kerosene lantern, or the kerosene lantern, and just ran it straight up. And he did check, and he was, 10, 15 degrees warmer inside than outside. So that was a significant difference. It was quite a cold day outside, and inside he got it quite warm. And those kerosene lanterns, they'll go for probably couple of days on a
Oh
low
yeah.
flame. So,
And I mean, if you really wanted to get into that, and I mean, this may be a topic for a different podcast. If you built a better chimney system so that you had a couple plates that would grab that residual heat but still vent the air up, you could probably make that way more efficient. And I've seen several designs from people that do these like small camp huts and stuff where they're using basically oil lamps. But they draw cold air in the bottom, that's their air intake, and then the hot air hits a piece of steel, and then it has to go like it's a tube that it's hitting. And then they have like a little fan of some sort. I assume it's like a wood stove fan, one of those thermal fans, that blow that heat out into the area you are in, but it's still sealed so much that the exhaust fumes kind of go up and out the pipe. It's hard to describe. Look it up online, folks. It'll make total sense.
I've seen one. I know what you're talking about. He's got a pipe that kind of S's through it, and it's nothing but clean air going in one side and coming, same air comes out. It doesn't mix with the flame barrier.
Yeah.
And then when he measured it, the temperature at the intake and outtake, and they're not that many degrees different from the burning section. So he managed to use that pipe to take most of the heat that the candles or lanterns, whatever he put in there, used. So one of the ones I seen, he ran it, I think, on three tea lights or four tea
Yeah,
lights.
I've seen a couple different things from candles to kerosene. Like he built his own kind of kerosene lantern thing. Even the couple those fuel blocks. I've seen those used as well in them.
And with the wood stoves, you can get if you look up the hot tove wood stoves, there's a like pizza oven or an oven that you can put on top of them, and it actually heats like all the air comes up to the bottom, it goes all the way around the chamber and in at the top and steals a lot of that heat. So yeah, anything you can do to get it out. The only thing you want to be careful of with the wood stove, and this is a real concern, if you're burning sooty, sappy wood, you could end up creating more creosote in your chimney by cooling it down too much.
And yeah, you ran into a little bit of this, didn't you, when you were out that one time? Maybe not during, but when you got back, you noticed there was significant creosote buildup in your pipe.
We have seen it, especially with the ammo cam one, because what the problem I was having with that one is, as the stove heated up enough creosote, there was a couple of them that almost welded together with the creosote, and I had to heat them really up to get them apart. Was it enough to cause a chimney fire or an issue? No, because it was only a couple of nights. And the thing that me and the other people I've gone with all seem to agree is you do need to clean those chimneys fairly regularly because you're re working with super thin material on most of these, on really cold temperatures over a short distance. And so that the stoves are small, they don't produce tons of heat, and that creosote does tend to build up a bit more, and you tend to burn wetter. It's not wood that's been seasoned for a couple of years, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's unseasoned, it's damper. That heat, you get some moisture and it creates a little bit of steam, it cools stuff down, you get creosote, just like Ben said. But I mean, there another topic to think about. The difference between if you did use like a UCO candle or oil lamps or something like that versus a wood stove is there is a lot less clean up, a lot less mess with the candles and stuff like that. But I mean, maybe the UCO, because I have seen somebody cook on one of those, or they claim you can cook on one of those. With a wood stove, you actually have a surface where you would be able to do some cooking and heating. Yes. And use it as a kind of cross kitchen as well, right?
Yes, and when I have had mine going, I've often had water boiling on top of it. I'm going to tell you, when it gets hot, yeah, you can cook decent on it. Oftentimes, I was not creating enough heat on it to cook easily. I still tend it to lean towards my wood stove, or not my wood, my cooking stove, my whatever I happen to be burning, gas, or, you know, is a bit lighters, whatever it is. That definitely was something I tended to use. It boiled water quicker and easier, and long boils in a hot tent tends to up your moisture level in there. So if you can get something boiling quick and easy, you're going to have a lot less evaporation, a lot less moisture build up inside. So as tempting it is to use the wood stove for that, do keep that in mind.
And this comes back to ventilation. The more stuff you're boiling, cooking inside, the more ventilation you're going to require to exhaust all those fumes, not just the fumes of what you're cooking, but the vapor and stuff like that too. So you don't build condensation on the inside, because you build condensation, temperature drops while you're sleeping, everything gets wet, gets cold, starts to freeze, you know. You sweat, you die. Well, if you're introducing mist into it, it's basically synthetic sweat. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. And what you're going to find in a hot tin pretty consistently is probably about 12, 13 inches from the ground, you're going to have like a lot of frost on your hot tin. And then above that, it's going to be pretty dry or just a little damp. And then above at the very top, it's usually fairly dry. And the reason for that is there's enough heat to evaporate that water. And as you go down, it's actually cold and it's actually frozen. So probably for the lowest few inches, the temperature in that tent is probably still below zero. But as you go up a little bit, it's a bit higher. So you do get this whole like environmental change inside the tent. And you can see it on the walls.
And on that note, that's a great lead-in. If you are interested in hot tenting and you have the option and weight is not a problem and stuff like that, if you can find some sort of cot to get you up off the ground, you're going to get a lot more heat.
One trip I took with my buddy Chris, he had the ultralight cots, and they only put you up 2 or 3 inches. But that 2 or 3 inches made a huge difference. We still used an insulated mattress underneath us. That definitely helped too. But the combination of getting off of the ground helped a lot and gets you that little bit closer to the higher temperatures. So,
yeah. And I mean, it is pretty significant. Like, just a little bit of height is going to get you a lot more heat. Something to keep in mind. So a comment here: have you heard of heating rocks up an outside fire than putting the rocks in a bucket of water inside? So it's a sweat lodge principle. Just don't go as hot. And this is kind of what we were just talking about there, John. Sorry, I kind of mumbled that comment out. So to say it one more time, have you ever heard of heating rocks up in an outside fire and then putting the rocks in a bucket of water inside? So sweat lodge principle, but you just don't go as hot. And yes, it would work to keep you warm. Problem is, you're now making a lot of moist air. So you are committing to keeping that warm inside, because the second that temperature starts to drop, as we talked about, all that moist air inside, it's going to conduct a lot of cold. It's going to seep into your stuff. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be almost impossible to dry a lot of your clothing and stuff like that. So just imagine being ever so slightly damp and standing outside. Because if you let that heat dissipate, that's exactly what's going to happen. It's not that it's a bad method. It's a very committed method. You have to keep that up, or at least have somewhere where it's going to be dry to keep some of your stuff. That way you don't get into that, you know, potentially hypothermic state.
Yeah. The thing to keep in mind with dry air and moist air is dry air changes temperature quicker. Dry air doesn't take a lot of effort to move its temperature up or down. Moist air takes more temperature because the water takes a lot more heat energy to change it a few degrees. So by putting it in a bucket warm, it is going to feel a lot warmer in there, and it will take a little longer for it to cool down. But when it does cool down, that moisture is going somewhere. And then it's going to take a lot more energy to turn that moisture back up warm. So with the dry air, it only takes a few degrees to get up, and then you just have to maintain that energy.
And another thing to keep in mind, and I may have the math wrong on this, so I'm sure somebody will step in if I did. Water expands 100 times when it turns from liquid to vapor. So like a drop of water is now going to take up like 100 times that space. So now you're spreading that mist over a much larger area. So it is literally going to dampen everything in there to some degree. But yeah, it's once again, not a bad method, just something to keep in mind.
1700 times, buddy.
Oh, 1700. There you go. I way undershot that. Nomad thought it was 400. So we're all lowballing that. I knew it was really high, and I really wanted to shoot low, but I didn't realize I shot that low.
So, yeah, I mean, that's how steam engines work, right? You want to get into that. That's some interesting stuff. Steam engines are pretty cool. I'm going to leave that at that.
Another topic for another night.
That is going back to the digital campfire thing there. You want to get into a long conversation.
Oh, today. Man. And still looking for people to do the digital campfire. We have a couple more committed of closer friends here that would like to jump on board with that. And we have Nomad. I would like to get like 5 or 6, to be perfectly honest. Yeah. Like, that would make a good show, I think. Anyway, moving on. Something you and I were talking about before we started this, and I guess this is the next logical progression here. Do you need a hot tent? Do you need a tent that is specifically designed for doing hot tenting? Or can you do some DIY stuff in here? And I guess there's a long answer, short answer to that in my side, but I'm interested to what you think on that, Ben.
No, you don't need a tent that's specifically a hot tent. But what you have to be awfully careful with is do you need a method for exhausting the gases? So, you know, the smoke or whatever. So an easy example might be the pop-up ice shelters for ice fishing.
Yep.
Those are great. There's no chimney hole in most of them, generally. You can probably get some with the chimney hole. So if you're going to do it, you might have to cut a hole in it. If you're going to do that, know that you could potentially damage it in such a way that it'll rip. It may be a structural thing. You can't really just poke a hole in it. Maybe there's a window you can alter. But just be careful. If you go to do that, you may damage it irreparably. I have seen people modify regular tents to do it. You are looking for a few things, though. Most summer tents are designed specifically to ventilate, right? You don't want the moisture and all that build. So they're more screen, less shelter. It's going to be really hard to keep heat into it because it's designed to let the heat out. So you are looking for more of a winter style tent, for sure.
The other thing that you said there was putting a chimney or an exhaust or something in there. And once again, we're going back to what we talked about before we came on here. That was one of the things I said when I attempted putting our stove up. I didn't have a stove jacket, so I ended up just putting like a piece of 6-inch pipe around the 2-inch exhaust that we had and kind of put some straps to hold it apart. So I knew it wouldn't burn the tent, but I was really hesitant to get it really cooking hot because you don't know how that's going to thermal change. But you came up with a really good idea for me too that you sent to me, and I didn't think of this. To make a stove jacket, you can kind of do that at home fairly inexpensive. And I'm going to let you tell the tale because it's your idea, honestly.
But I think if you go back, I think there's actually a video where I talk about it. But what I did is I went to, I'm pretty sure the dollar store I found it. And there's these cookie sheet liners or barbecue liners. I bought barbecue one because they're meant to take direct flame. You can get ones black. You can get ones that are kind of golden in color. And there's ones that are thicker silicone with like little fibers and stuff in it. Those are the three I've often seen. You can get them at Canadian Tire, Walmart, most grocery stores. Yeah, there's some examples of them. The one lower, they were more of a fibrous material. And so what I did was I just cut a square the size of the Velcro hole on the stove tent, the hot tent I had. And just put Velcro all the way around, hold it, and then you cut an X and push your chimney up through. And it worked fine. In fact, the one I made years ago is still working perfectly fine. It's the only one I have. I have two like it, but I've never bought a proper stove jack, and it's worked perfectly fine. So you can make that. Honestly, Velcro you can get at the dollar store. You can buy these liners in the dollar store. And if you're not good at sewing, you can even take like a paper stapler and staple the Velcro in place.
Yeah, and you were saying that. And I think I'm probably going to run mine through the sewing machine, much like I said, or at least I'm going to attempt to run it through the sewing machine. I don't know if my sewing machine is going to be heavy duty enough to puncture through it. I'm going to have to see it and check it out.
Oh, these are not hard to sew through. I have sewn through much worse.
Yeah, but you had a better sewing machine than me.
Maybe. But I mean, so if you can get through regular material, this stuff is not super tough. The black one I found much more plasticky, and I was worried it would rip. And just take your time when you're sewing. Don't rush, because you could, if it bunches up, you may have some issues. But yeah, it's take time, go through it.
And if you can make that, that's a good way to get a stove jacket in there. At least it's going to be one I'm going to attempt to experiment a little more. You know what I mean? And when it comes to stovepipe too, you can get some really good lightweight stovepipes. Like you can get titanium that roll up and they go together with metal bands. But for the one we made, we used literally car exhaust.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It's heavy. Granted, it's not ultra light like the titanium and stuff like that, but it works really well.
Yeah. So I went through three chimney designs by the time I settled for the one I have now. And I eventually did. I mean, let's admit it. I bought from Amazon a stove designed for it, a folding titanium stove. And I absolutely love it. You can get stainless steel ones too. The first one I had was that exactly that. It was exhaust pieces. So they were pre-expanded exhaust pipe. I think I cut some of them down so they'd fit inside the stove that I had. And that worked perfectly good. It worked well. It was sturdy. You didn't have to worry. I could pound on the things if I needed to. And yeah, they weighed a bit, but I was pulling it with a bulk sled. Then I upgraded. I managed to get some very thin, small pieces of steel, much stronger and thicker than tin foil, but think tin foil like. And I wrapped it up. And since they were only about 2 foot long, I had to just stack them, same as I did the other chimney. And I made a couple of rings out of basically baling wire, which I tied around the original exhaust pipe ones. So I think they were 2-inch exhaust pipes to get the same size, and then wrapped it all the way around, twisted it nice and tight, and slid them off. And those were the rings to hold the coils together. You were going to do that, figure out how big around you want to go, and then go about another 30% so there's decent overlap.
But yeah, you don't, I guess the main point I want to let people know about on this was you don't have to buy the actual stovepipe for those things, because they get fairly expensive, but you kind of get what you pay for too. As Ben was kind of saying here with his different designs, like if you want to use stovepipe, comparatively, it's relatively cheap, but it's also very heavy. But is heavy duty also means it's very sturdy. You know what I mean?
Is it cheap though? Like
not anymore. Honestly, once upon a time it was. You used to be able to go to Canadian Tire and buy like 2 foot section for $14. Now, good luck on that.
That's what I think. By the time I finished making the original set, I think I figured out the chimney still ended up costing me just shy of $100. And if you go online and look up the hot stove chimneys, because I think you can buy them individually, they're only a little over $100.
And they're lightweight, easy to pack up. So, I mean, you folks out there are going to have to make your own opinions on that. You know what I mean? Happened to be we had stovepipe and it was easier to get. At the time. Now with Amazon and online retailers and stuff like that, it's pretty easy to get that stuff. But once upon a time, that stuff wasn't as common and it was harder to ship.
Here is one. Stainless steel or titanium, you choose. $80 on Amazon.
That's actually a pretty good deal. How long is it?
8 foot two, 6 foot five, or 5 foot, or 9 foot eight. So let's go with the longest one and the most expensive one. Under $100 for the chimney. Comes with the rings.
I was going to say, how can you beat that nowadays, honestly? You can't.
So, if you can't get it any other way, yeah, you can make it. But honestly, I'm going to recommend everyone go and just buy it.
Honestly, it's less hassle, folks. I'm not gonna lie. I've used the exhaust pipe out there. It works. But here's some other complications with something like that, just because of the weight. As you stack that up, you're creating an unbalance on a stove below because the pipe is now weighing significantly more than the stove. So you got to keep that in mind too. So buying it, if it's cheap and it's light, that's the way to go, honestly.
Yeah. If you look up the set I just sent you, there's a suggested to buy. You can get the damper and the spark arrestor to go on top. And I think that's an important thing to talk a little bit about. Someone might look at you and say, do I need a spark arrestor? And my answer is unequivocally yes.
Well, it kind of works twofold here. Not only is it a spark arrestor, but the little chimney cap as well that goes with it. The chimney cap is going to keep moisture from creeping down. It's going to help with creosote buildup a little bit. The spark arrestor could go the other way. It's gonna be an area that could potentially build up with creosote, depending on the thickness or, you know, the hole size that you get in your spark arrestor. But the other side of this is the spark arrestor also stops the sparks from flying outside, hopefully. And depending on what your tent or maybe your buddy's tents are made out of, this could be an important thing.
Yeah. And I did. I did put a couple of small holes in a tent one time because we were burning softwood. There was some flankers coming out of it. And I'm sitting in the tent. I can remember to this day, I'm looking up through, and you can see the pretty flames shooting out of the top of the stove. And then I watched the embers coming down through the air, and they sat on the tent. And then I'm flapping the tent, trying to get them to stay off of it. And the next morning I wake up, and there's two or three pinpricks through it. Now, you can buy the tenacious tape and fix those pretty quickly. It's pretty efficient. Doesn't really hurt anything, but still, it's annoying, right?
Yeah, it's you're creating a problem that you never had to solve until you created the problem.
Yeah.
So I agree 100% with you. If you have the ability, get the spark arrestor. You're going to save yourself a lot of headache there, honestly. And like I said, the cap on top, yeah, I agree with those as well. Keep in mind, your chimney has to be a little bit above your shelter, ideally, to allow for draw. If you keep it below your shelter, you're going to get a lot of baffle back and smoke coming inside your shelter. I know this just from houses. I assume it's the same.
It's definitely the same. I highly suggest that the stove stick out probably at least a foot over the highest point of your tent. And that means, like, when wind and stuff and the hot gases out of the top is not melting the top of your tent. You definitely want to be clearing that by between a foot and 18 inches anyways. So when you're looking at buying one, realize your stove sits probably, say, a foot 16 inches off the ground. And in whatever the height of your tent is, if it's a 7-foot tent, you need at least an 8-foot chimney to be nice and clear of that. And then the other thing is the top, like the spark arrestor, which goes on the top, is your cap. Mine also has three lines on it that I can use to stabilize my chimney.
Yeah, and thank you for bringing that up. I was going to mention, leading in from where the exhaust pipe adds a lot of weight on the top and it creates on balance, you may need some sort of guy line system to keep this whole thing together and from falling over, because you don't want your stove or your stove pipe falling into your tent, regardless if you got a stove jacket or not. Because at some point, if it falls over and it's putting a lot of weight on one side, you're now getting more heat to that side, it may start deteriorating your actual sleep shelter, which you don't want when you're out in the woods. And, you know, heaven forbid if it catches on fire.
See, you definitely want to come out of it. Last year, there was quite a few stories of people who went in to test some of this stuff out and came out no tent. And because something fell apart or something happened and it was damaged, you know what I mean? So, hello, Steve's here, eh?
Yep, I was just saying hi to Steve. Yeah, sorry, I kind of got derailed there and I lost my train of thought.
We said the stove isn't essential, but good. Something that produces heat is a really good idea when camping in these things. I mean, they're hot tents. They're meant to be heated somewhat. There's quite a variety of them.
Oh, for sure.
So we have the teepee style.
We do. Before we go down to styles, there's one thing I want to backtrack on just a tiny bit because we talked about it and I don't want to lose my train of thought on it. Something that I learned from tenting that you knew, I did not, was when you put your hot tent up, especially the TP style, much like I have, you got to bank these things in a little bit or air can kind of get underneath it and pulled in. And I did find there was a draft that, like, as the heat went up and pulled, you know, everything out, that cold air wanted to rush in at the bottom. And if you don't have that, you know, banked to some degree, I could see that actually causing some problems while you're sleeping, because now you have constant air moving over you at the lowest spot, and that's going to be pulling that cold air basically just over you, and you may actually find your stove to be slightly counterproductive. Your front may be warm that's facing it, but now you're creating a constant column of air going up your backside and going out the top, which could lead to other problems. So for me, I literally had to bank around this a little bit. I had to make sure it was all staked down, and anywhere where there was big pockets of air that could be pulled in, I just threw some leaves or snow over it. You know what I mean? Just kind of made a makeshift banking system. But it's worth keeping in mind. Same as a ground sheet. A ground sheet's a good thing to have when you're camping out in a hot tent.
Yes. I mean, that is a very good thing to have.
Chris gave me a kerosene tent heater. I think I know the one you're talking about. It's just a kerosene, a Coleman kerosene heater. Probably runs, is it kerosene or would it be like camp fuel? I don't know if I've seen them run off. Well, kerosene camp fuel is very similar, I guess. But yeah. I've seen the camp fuel ones, and they're actually not a bad system, Steve. You came in a little late. We did talk about some of these a few minutes ago, and we were saying it's not a bad idea, these things. We talked about kerosene lamps and candles and the UCO candles and stuff like that, and the kerosene heater would fall under this. You're going to need some sort of stable platform so it's not just sitting there, and you're still going to need some way to exhaust some of the gases off so that you're not going to asphyxiate yourself with CO2 and CO, carbon monoxide, because that is going to put off both with that kind of fuel.
I think they call them catalytic, is it?
What is it?
I'm trying to look it up. Catalytic heater, maybe? Yeah. It's the style it's called.
The one I'm envisioning is like the ones that, you know, the old Coleman lamps that took camp fuel and you would pump them up. I seen heaters that are like that, and you just pump them up and they kind of, you ignite them and they burn.
Sort of. They do burn. It's instead of like a steady flame, it's like a glow. And there's a little bit less exhaust with it. There's an old style looking for it. I have one too that's or I had one. You know.
Coleman Coletic Heater. Coletic Heater.
Coletic Heaters, yeah.
I know the one you're talking about. And yeah, that's kind of what I was envisioning there. What Steve may be talking about, maybe one of these easy light models where it looks like the old propane heaters that you'd be able to put out. And there's the other thing, folks. That's another idea that we never even talked about. You can get those Coleman little buddy heaters that run off the single propane cylinders. They're going to heat things up. And I know this question's coming up. That's why I'm bringing it up now. They will work. They're going to create heat. You're still going to need to exhaust some of that gas off. You're still going to have to be careful of carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide. You also have to be a little more careful with how you direct those, because they do tend to blow heat out at something. You know what I mean? So just make sure if you're pointing them at you that you have enough space that it's not going to start melting your sleeping bag. Most sleeping bags are made of vinyl on some sort on the outside, and you don't want that to melt or catch on fire and you be in the middle of it. Just keep that in mind. That's with any of these heating methods. The radiant heat tends not to be as bad as the directed heat that would come off something like that. But as long as you're smart and you kind of keep it in mind, you should be able to work with it a little bit.
So these I've sent you a few examples now, but, they're traditionally used inside, so they don't off gas as much for whatever reason. I guess the burn is more full.
Yeah. And that last one that you sent is exactly what Steve was talking about. That red one.
Yeah. Yeah, he's sending some pictures too. I did play with them. They are quite good. And if the biggest similar one that's present now is probably along the lines of the heater buddy.
And it's the one that you would pump up, and like I said, it's a directed heat.
They work quite good. Anything, you have to be careful. Wood stove, gas, whatever, there's a temperature that comes out of it. I highly recommend probably picking up a CO2 sensor and keeping with you. Or a
Yeah,
carbon
that's what he,
monoxide
Steve was
heater.
saying. He would probably take something like that.
You talked about banking it up. Do be careful. You can't seal a hot tank completely up. It is, if you're heating inside, it is consuming fuel and air, so it's going to steal some of the air. It needs to replenish that. But you're right. You need to build it so that it's not a steady flow, but a
Or at least
mild
keep the
flow.
draft side away from where you're sleeping. Bank that side, you know what I mean?
So if there is wind coming to you, build the snow up so that the wind goes over the tent for the most part. It doesn't blow through. What I have done usually is probably a couple inches all the way around. I make sure the snow is quite a bit higher than the tent, and I leave a tiny gap so the air can come along. It has to go all the way down and then up around to get in. And then even on the inside, I will try to put my sleeping gear and stuff behind me. So if there's wind is coming in, it hits that and goes over me.
All things to think about. Like I said, I am going to go out and do some hot tending this year, even if it's in the backyard. I want to start working on some things. And these are just things I've noticed now. I'm waiting for a little bit more snow. I would like a little bit more snow before I go out. I want to try to do this as proper as possible. That way I have materials to work with. And then as the spring comes, I may try and, do it with less and less snow, hopefully less, not much moisture, but we'll see how that goes. I want to try a few different things. And we talked about what else were we talking about there? I can't remember what it was now. But anyway, all food for thought. Anything else you want to talk about on these hot tents, Ben? I covered most of the topics that I could think of that I want to brush up on this. I already mentioned that you should bring a ground sheet. That's just to keep you up off the ground because if you are putting heat in there and you're on snow, it's obviously going to melt a little bit and get things wet. So you need some sort of a vapor barrier.
One thing that might be useful to people, if you can find one that you like, if you can get a small tent fan and put near the top and blow a little bit of air back down, you can keep the inside much more consistently heated. So something that can disturb that airflow and sort of keep it going. So Coleman makes ones that can stick to the side of a tent or stick off your pole. We did try that. That was quite successful. Something to just, it doesn't need to be like hard blow, just something that's moving that area, and that gets that heat channel a little lower, a little more consistent. Safety first, above all else. And make sure that your sleep system is warm enough that if the stove goes out, you're still going to be warm. So you still need to bring a decent winter sleeping bag. You can still boost it. We've talked before about throwing like a body warmer in there, which is just those little chemical heaters.
Just the bigger ones of these, basically. These are the hand warmer ones.
Do the other things you would normally do. Put clean, dry clothing on before you go to sleep. That keeps some of the moisture off of you. Keeps your sleeping system as dry as possible. Especially for a multi-day trip, the sleeping bag will tend to build moisture up and become a little less efficient. But yeah, no, that's the majority of it, the things that we really needed to cover.
You need to join the campfire talk, John. You need, and yeah, John, you should join the campfire talk, bud. I was just reading some of the comments there. They're having a little chat about some military surplus items. Yeah, honestly, once again, all this topic was just get the creative juices flowing for people. Try to encourage you folks to get out there and do some hot tent camping if you even have the slightest inkling to attempt it. It was always a thing for me. I always wanted to do it, but I always kept coming up with excuses. And finally, I was just like, you know what? Screw it. I'm gonna throw it up in the backyard. And there's not as much to it as I thought, but there's way more to it than I potentially thought as well. You know what I mean? You don't need as much to get going as I thought, but there's a lot more that you got to think about once you start getting set up. So, and it's a lot of fun, and you can do a lot of stuff. it's just a new experience, and it's definitely worth trying, in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure. But if you don't have a great success, you can always come up here and come with me to, in January.
Ben has the experience. He'll show you where everything has gone wrong.
Hey, man, I went in with one buddy, and he rolled over and burned part of a sleeping bag. Like, those things do happen.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a real thing. Like, you got to be careful. You are playing with fire. You know what I mean?
Oh, highly recommend this trick. And I do. You're going to need a fair amount of firewood, like more than you expect to keep a hot tent running and a hot stove. When you collect that wood, put it between you and the stove. So if anything happens, you roll over, you hit the wood pile and not the stove.
So wouldn't that block the heat from hitting you, though? Wouldn't you lose some radiant heat from there? But I suppose it's close enough to you that you can just grab it and throw it in the stove, then.
Honestly, by the time I'm in my sleeping bag, my sleeping system in, I don't need that heat. It's nice to have it warm outside in case you get up and have to go pee or whatnot. But honestly, no, you don't need it so much. It's nice to have the fire going well in the evening before when you're talking to your buddies or you're doing whatever, you read your book, you're watching your movie, you're not fully in. Then when you go to sleep, I usually put a bit in and I go to sleep. If it goes completely out in the middle of the night, it's okay. When I wake up, I'll stir it out, see if I can fill it up again and get it going. I'll make my breakfast on it. I'll cook my eggs. I'll make my oatmeal, whatever I happen to be doing. I don't worry about it making it through the night. If I wake up in the night, I will throw a few pieces in to keep it going. But honestly, that can really rob you of a night's sleep, because if you wake up and you're having trouble getting it going and then you're in there blowing in it and trying to get pieces of wood and throwing a few pieces of birch bark in, that can waste your night. It takes a bit to get it going and going it good and then to keep it going. So, yeah.
Red Sand Adventures just jumping in with us there. Danny saying hi. Yeah. Actually, that's a really good point there. And that's some, like I said, right from the get-go, this is just to kind of break the chill. Your sleep system still has to do a lot of the heavy lifting.
It does. It does. It just means that in the meantime, you can be pretty comfortable.
And John had a good point here. It's nice to have that heat for a baby wipes bath. And that's just like you were saying, Ben, like the right before bed when you're cleaning up and stuff, it's nice to be not basically flapping around in the breeze outside when it's cold. Have a little bit of heat, you can get cleaned up, get your stuff on, get cuddled down into your sleep system, and then the stove's just kind of there.
Yeah, it's nice to be able to do that change to get the wet, cold clothing off and sort of get into your dry clothes. It's really good when you got a couple of people you can chat for a bit and you don't feel froze. You don't have to have mitts and a hat and you're not cuddling into something. It's nice to be able to relax. When you go to crawl into bed, you're down pretty close to the ground. You're not getting a ton of great stuff, like kind of the heat from the stove. You are down to your sleep system. Good set of thermals, good sleeping bag, a mattress to keep you off the ground, ground sheet like you mentioned. I'll often take a separate down blanket or something that I can throw on top to boost it. And those cool nights, like cool air outside and a nice warm inside, actually makes an awful nice sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's one of the main things I like about the wood stove here at the house. I keep a wood fire going, but I keep a window cracked in the bedroom because I like the cooler air. But then when you walk out of the bedroom and into the warm heat, it just kind of, it's nice. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So anyways, I think we tried to end this a couple of times, but...
Yeah, but like normal, we keep jumping down rabbit holes and rambling. But yeah, let's end her there. We're coming up on 50 minutes anyway.
Get in there. Have fun.
And as always, let us know about it if you can. And once again, folks, we're putting another shout out there for the digital campfire. Potentially maybe looking to make this happen right after Christmas. I know the holidays are rolling around now, or at least this is my thoughts, Ben, unless you've got something different. Holidays are rolling around now. I know it's going to be hard for people to start making time and all that stuff. So maybe into the new year, we're going to set a date. Whoever shows up, shows up. And we're just going to go with it and see how it works.
I want to look something up. I just want, just hold on one second. Let's just...
And this, folks, is how we get our 1 hour shows. We find rabbit holes and we just keep digging.
I don't know what your plans for over Christmas are, but if you want to do like a Christmas Eve show or something, I might be game.
You might be gone?
Game.
Is Christmas Eve on a Wednesday night this year?
Sunday night.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll see. Let's play it by ear and see what happens.
Okay. See y'all.
Night, everybody. See you next week.